Welcome to the Healthy, Wealthy, and Smart podcast, where healthcare meets business, with your host, me, Dr. Karen Litzy. And just as a reminder, the information in this podcast is for entertainment purposes only and is not to be used as personalized medical advice. Enjoy the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Healthy, Wealthy, and Smart podcast. I am your host, Dr. Karen Litzy, owner of Karen Litzy Physical Therapy, located in New York City. And on today's podcast, we are going to be talking to an international chess grandmaster, which is perfect timing as I'm kind of wanting to learn how to play chess. So I'm really happy to welcome to the show analyst, commentator, and MC, motivational speaker, author, DVD producer, app developer, and Hall of Fame inductee, international grandmaster, Maurice Ashley. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Karen, and mentioning that I'm a DVD producer. What is that? I was back in the old days. But hey, it's definitely I want to keep that on my resume.
Yes, absolutely. Hey, listen, you are putting out great content into the world, so it needs to be told. Now, before we get going, can you give the definitions to the listeners of what is a chess grandmaster?
That's always a super hard question, but first of all, a grandmaster is the highest title you can get in chess that is conferred on you by the International Chess Federation. You get the title by accomplishing in battle, in tournament play, what is required for the federation to say, okay, that guy's good enough, that lady's good enough, you deserve to be a grandmaster. And it's pretty much the people you play against who are already established players. You have to do well against them. But I like to explain it using basketball, which is my favorite sport. Go Knicks. The point is, let's think about if you had to become an all-star, right? And somebody said, okay, the way you're going to become an all-star is you're going to have to play one-on-one against LeBron James, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Luka Doncic, Djokovic, and the rest of the gang. 10 of them line up in front of you. And they say, if you can play against these 10 and you get 5 out of 10, you beat 5 of them, then you're going to be an all-star. Well, against that group, you're actually going to be one of the best players in the league, period. Megastar. But that's how we do it in chess. You calculate it based on just how good the opposition is. And maybe if you had to play against the bench warmers in the pros, now instead of getting 5, you might have to get 7 wins or 8 wins to prove yourself. So there's a really rigorous mathematical formula that I'm not going to try to explain to your listeners because they'd fall asleep and leave. But that is basically how it works.
Got it. Yeah, that was, you kind of beat me to the punch because I was going to say, is it kind of like a point system? Like, yeah. Do you have to get so many, accumulate so many points and then you become a grandmaster? And do you get that by playing really good people?
Rating matters, like the numerical rating. But what matters most is beating the top players. Holding your own against other grandmasters and international masters, internationally ranked players. You've got to be able to go in that group of gangsters and prove yourself. There's no other way to do it.
And once you're a grandmaster and you beat another grandmaster, shouldn't you be like a super grandmaster?
That's not how it works.
Oh, that's not how it works.
That's not how it works. I mean, think about it again with a sports analogy. If a tennis player beats another tennis player, a pro beats a pro, they don't become a super pro. They just beat another pro. So right. That's
cool, cool. Now, how did you, when and how were you introduced to chess? How old were you? When did all this start?
When I was about 8 or 9 years old, I'm from the island of Jamaica. I was born there. I watched my brother play with his friends, and I learned the basic rules there. But I wasn't any good. We played a lot of games, and chess happened to be one of them. It wasn't until I went to Brooklyn Technical High School in Brooklyn.
Ooh, smart, smart.
When I came to the U.S., I was 12 years old. I went to Brooklyn Tech when I was 14, and I saw a friend of mine playing, a classmate. And I remember that I knew how to play. I knew the rules. And I was always a smart kid. So I won a lot against other people at pretty much any board game I played. But I played my friend, and he completely demolished me. It wasn't even close. It was just like, duh, checkmate, you're an idiot. And I didn't understand why that was. But then something really special happened. I was in the library, and I saw on the bookshelf a book on chess. And it's as though some kind of magical fairy genie just put a chess book in front of me. Because I had no idea that there were books on chess. So I checked the book out of the library solely so I could crush my friend. I read the book, saw these weird figures and strategies and funny names, these Soviet names and old grandmasters and all that. Learned everything, went back to play my friend, and he crushed me again. And it turns out that he had read that book and a bunch of other books. But that started it. Very competitive. My family is uber competitive. I have a 3-time world champion kickboxer as a brother and a 6-time world champion boxer as a sister.
Oh, my gosh.
So we are a very competitive family. I did not take that lying down. Eventually, I read every book I could get my hands on and beat my friend. And that just started the entire love affair.
Got it. And you know, I'm kind of asking for a friend. Are you ever too old to learn?
The answer is no. My father really picked up the game again in his late 60s and 70s. Now, I got a pretty smart dad, but still, I mean, that's a bit on the older side. And he was playing a lot more than me at that point in his life. So no, you're never too old to learn. And if you're talking about yourself, you're definitely not too old.
Thank goodness. Okay, so a lot of people that tune in, a lot of our listeners, they're healthcare professionals, they're entrepreneurs, and there's got to be lessons that you have learned over the years playing chess and playing amongst the best of the best that you can impart to our listeners. So, you know, what advice do you have for those who, you know, might be struggling to kind of find their way, might be struggling making those big decisions, right? Because chess is all about making, I think, very thoughtful decision making, right? So what advice do you have for people if we were to take what you've learned and put it into life?
Well, that's what my book, Move by Move, is about. So first of all, go get my book. Out in stores, Move by Move. You can also get it on Amazon. And it's called Life Lessons on and Off the Chessboard for a reason. They're the lessons that I really felt were the most important lessons I wanted to put down in the book, because chess imparts tons of lessons. I mean, it's absolutely outrageous how much this game is like a discipline masking as a game. You just learn so much from playing. You learn so much from learning about the world and the strategies and everything. But there are some ideas that jump out at me. And one of them that I think is maybe the most critical relative to what you were talking about is how much the destination gets its value from the journey. You know, a lot of us kind of want the thing. Like, I'm going after that thing, whether it's in business or it's personal. You're going after that thing and you're struggling. You're having difficulties. You can't figure it out. The resources are a challenge. You face obstacles and the like. But the destination you're after really is only as valuable as that journey you took, because those things are teaching you so much about yourself, about life, about how to become successful, that by overcoming those obstacles, by improving yourself, by absorbing those lessons, you get to that next level. And then when you arrive, you're like, wow. You don't just think, oh, I got the thing. You think, I learned, I became another being entirely. And that's the biggest thing I think I've taken away from chess. There's a number of other things, like I said, but that one, it matters so much in terms of your resilience, your dedication, your stick-to-itiveness, your hard work, your willingness to face disappointment, your ability to do so, your ability to not let success get to your head and just be grateful. And I think that, move by move, piece by piece, that's what chess teaches the most. It's that the long game only matters based on each and every step you take.
And do you have like an example in your life where maybe you were at that point, like, oh man, I just want to get to whatever it is. And you said, okay, hold on. I need to take a step back. Where am I right now? And where do I have to move? Like, can you think of like an example that you took that and put it into your own life?
Well, I'll give you a really big example of that. One of the biggest examples ever that happened to me. I was playing in a tournament in Bermuda. It was against a player, Michael Betzold, a grandmaster from Germany. And I knew that if I won that game, I'd accumulated enough wins before in the tournament. And I knew if I won that game, mathematically, I would achieve what I needed to achieve and I would be given the grandmaster title. And of course, I'd been chasing this title for years. So, and I had failed many times. I'm playing him. I have a big decision to make and I screw it up and I lose the game. I'm completely devastated. I walk away from the board and standing there is another grandmaster, Alexander Shabalov. And Shabalov knew the moment where I had messed up. And he came over to me to console me and he said to me these words. No, don't worry. In order to become a grandmaster, you must first be a grandmaster. And that was like some Yoda stuff, like, what? And then as I absorbed what he was saying, I realized exactly what he meant. And that was, you don't become the thing by chasing it, by trying to get the points. By playing scared in the moment because you're just trying to get that thing. You first have to be everything that that thing is. You have to study to that level. You have to inspect yourself, the kind of introspection that allows you to understand what it is that you really want, how it is that pressure affects you, what happens when there's that critical moment and you have to make a decision and you have to stay cool under that kind of intense pressure. And I got it. It's like, I have to go do everything, live the grandmaster life, study the way I need to, just do everything so that when I come to the board, I'm already a grandmaster. I'm just proving it at the board, right? I'm not becoming one by ooh, winning the game. No, it's kind of when you think about passing the bar. People study for the test. You're supposed to like get as much knowledge as you need so you can just pass this test. No, I want to know that you know your stuff so well that when you think, what test? I'm going to kill that test because I'm that thing already. And that's the kind of path you have to work towards. And so that process made me revisit my training techniques. I mean, his words made me revisit my training techniques, made me really understand or try to better understand who I was. So when the moment came again, which it did a year later against an international master from Romania, Adrian Negulescu, in New York City, of all places, I had this tournament. I had to win that game. And when that same thing happened again, that moment when I had to make a decision, I confidently made the decision that needed to be made and ended up winning the game. And there it was. And I didn't become a grandmaster because I already was one.
Right. It's kind of like, you make this mistake and then you can kind of work backwards from that to build yourself back up so that the next time you go into battle, quote unquote, you're like, I have lived this.
It's not quote
Right?
unquote,
Like
it's battle.
it's battle. Yeah.
It's
Like
battle.
you're like, I have lived this, I've done this, I know the ins and outs, I understand my mistakes, I've learned from them, and now I'm, like you said, I am the grandmaster, like I am ready for this.
And that's another lesson that I talk about in the book, which is embracing mistakes. We chess players are very much sticklers for studying our mistakes. A lot of people make a mistake, they want to forget it. It happened. Don't harp on it. Please, I don't want to talk about it. I'm not going to do it again. That's it. That's not how you deal with mistakes. You look it straight in the face and say, what happened here? Why did I go wrong? And I don't want to know that I went wrong, or maybe I didn't understand a little bit from knowledge base. I want to know why me personally, why I made this mistake. Because a lot of times mistake not just only come in pairs, they come in multiples. There's a pattern to what's going on. And so if you're careful enough to remember the mistakes that you make and document them, that's what we chess players do. We document our mistakes and say, okay, that mistake happened in this situation. Let me keep that in mind, because usually it's going to happen again. And when you see it again, you say, oh, this thing happened to me again. And it's situational. It's not like it's the move that you played. It's the mindset that you had. And that's the thing that's harder to break, is that mindset. Because usually, like Mike Tyson says, everyone has a plan until they've been punched in the mouth. Usually, you will revert to your normal behavior when you're under pressure. You'll just instantly go to that comfortable place. This is what you do when you're under pressure. That's how human beings are wired. And so they find it very difficult to do even the new thing that they learn, that they have to behave differently. But as soon as you hit them in the face, okay, I got to do what I always do here, which you already know is wrong. So we have to get deep into the weeds of our emotion, mindset, history, trauma, everything that makes us repeat bad behavior. And only by facing it do you overcome it. And so for us, as I said, one of the big lessons of chess is you've got to embrace your mistakes. You've got to own them so that you can overcome them.
And that's how our brains work, right? Our brains are always going to always going to want to do the path of least resistance. So we're always going to
Absolutely.
want to go back to something you know, something you're comfortable with, something you did in the past, even though it may give you the same result that is not the result that you want, but it's the easier path.
That's how our brains are absolutely wired. We're lazy. We want to sit on the sofa, right? Like that's, we just want to relax. And so we don't want hard solutions. We want the easiest solution to the problem. And that's not how life works. I mean, especially stuff that's been ingrained in you for decades. You're going to have to face the hard path. But again, as I said, any destination can only be valued by the journey to that point. So just because it's hard, I mean, it's great that it's hard, because you're going to be amazing when you come out on the other side. And yes, we are lazy. We're always looking for that shortcut. And one example I use in the book has to do with winning. When you see a team, you might see I'll use basketball again. When a team's up 20 points, you often find that the players start to check out, like, eh, this is easy. We can relax. We're going to cruise. We're going to try to dribble the clock down, just get to that finish.
Slow the game down.
Slow the game down. And you do nothing. They stop doing what it took for them to be blasting this team in the first place. And it's just fascinating to watch game after game how often professionals being paid millions of dollars will relax when they have a lead, as though the lead is safe. And as a chess player, I understand I cannot take my foot off the gas. I know that. I have to keep absolutely focused, because one false slip, and this player is a grandmaster sitting across the board from me, is going to come back. And I'm going to feel much worse when they suddenly switch the game around and I'm no longer winning and I'm going to chase the win. And then that's the other thing. But now I want to go back to doing what I was doing. But oh, sorry, momentum shifted and it's a bit different now. And then you make the bad move and then you're losing all of a sudden. So that demands focus. And a lot of times it's very difficult to maintain focus when you're successful. Very difficult to stay hungry. I'll substitute the word hunger for focus, the word focus for hunger. Very difficult to stay focused slash hungry when you're successful. It's like, yeah, I'm doing this. I'm just going to keep doing this. Instead of keeping that foot on the gas and really understanding you could lose your gains or you don't get any more gains because you just got complacent. And so that's a thing that we try to train ourselves for when we're playing chess to try to stay focused all the way throughout. It's very difficult during a chess game because we don't have a coach. In basketball, the coach will go, time out.
Right.
Get your rear end back on this chair. Let's talk about this because you're screwing it up. But you need to build that into your life. Somebody who could be like, yo, stop what you're doing. Let's get focused again so we can get back on our winning ways.
Yeah. And that was actually my next question, was going to ask about how you can kind of maintain focus and motivation in these challenging times. So you definitely segued into that beautifully. So how do you have any techniques or any tips or tricks that you use to help keep you focused and keep you motivated so that, you know, you're not the team running out the shot clock while the other team is driving to the basket every time?
You know, it's extremely difficult. And yes, I do have, when I was playing the height of my career, I would do things like practice meditation, right? I took a martial art called Aikido for different reasons, not only for that, but also because the art uses the opponent's energy. It's not martial, if you will. You're not kicking and punching. You're actually throwing after somebody kicks and punches. So I had to learn that on the chessboard because I was always hyper aggressive. I had all that Jamaican Brooklyn in me where you just go, ah, go kill him, right? And I thought that was the way to do it, but it didn't work at the highest level. They took your aggression and used it against you. So when I realized that, the bell went off and I said, I need to get this physically in my being, this concept in my body. I need to believe in it instead of trying to be even more aggressive. And that's when I studied Aikido, and that really transformed the whole direction of my style. But it also, while I was taking Aikido, there was a lot of meditation exercises that were along with that. And that helped me to focus in the moment. The secret about focus is that you will always lose focus.
Always.
But you can bring yourself back.
Yeah.
That's the key. And that takes paying attention to your inner state, because you'll be in the middle of a chess game and all of a sudden you're thinking, so what am I having for dinner later? Oh, the Knicks play later. You know, you just start thinking other stuff. But then you go, whoa, 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 get back to the game.
Bring
and
it
that's
back.
The constant self-monitoring. But I have to tell you, frankly, the most effective way to maintain focus is to have somebody whose job it is for you. Like, that's
yeah,
better than you doing it yourself. I'm not saying you should simply, you know, abdicate responsibility for your own mental state. But man, if you have someone who's you can turn to, who's going to give it to you straight and say, hey, hold on now, you've lost it this moment, we need to get it back. And other advice as well. That's why chess players have trainers and coaches. Somebody who's going to give it to you straight that you can trust, they're always better. And, you know, you may not be able to have just one. Maybe you can get two or three if possible. But you need a team, and you need that team to keep you on the straight and narrow, keep you on your toes, and be ready to take whatever they have to say. Don't start poo-pooing it. Oh, no, I'm not doing that. Listen up. Other people watching sometimes know a lot more than you do about yourself.
Yeah. And so if we were to translate this into the business world, if you're a solopreneur or if you're someone who's a small business owner, it's really important to have that group of people around you, whether it's people that you pay to be around you, whether it's peers or mentors. You need those people around you to help keep you on your path and to hold you accountable. Because otherwise, it's like super easy to come home and like binge on Netflix.
Absolutely.
Right. And
or
not
play
do
chess
anything.
All night.
Or play chess,
play chess all
night.
Night. Trust me, I've done it. The wisest advice I've gotten in that way, or at least the most memorable one, actually didn't come on the chessboard. It came from an Uber driver. This is a guy who managed people all his life, but now he was driving Uber. And he said these words to me. He said, everybody needs a boss. I don't care if you're a solopreneur, as you mentioned, like you're an artist, you're a chess player. It sounds like, you know, that's exactly why I became a chess player. So I wouldn't have to have a boss and do a 9-to-5. But he said, everybody needs a boss. Somebody out there that holds you accountable. So they're not like a boss, and they tell you what to do and they fire you if you don't do it. No, but they hold you accountable. Everybody, even the boss, needs a boss. Like
yep.
somebody or a team that holds you accountable. And you've got to build that into your business. And actually, you have to finance that as well. You may have to pay this person, whoever it is. If you can't get it from your friends, then you're going to have to get it from somebody who's willing to do it. And then it's going to randomly show up. So that has to be a part of your business expenses. Somebody in your corner, consultant, whoever it is, who is keeping you accountable
right.
and making sure that you're maximizing your abilities.
Yeah, a coach. Everybody needs a coach. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs that person there. Okay. So, you know, we spoke about destination and the journey, which was great advice. And that's actually advice I got from my dad.
Nice.
Like 20 years ago was, he called it destination anxiety, where you're so anxious just to get to the destination that you're not really taking in and understand the journey that got you there. You're not learning anything. You're just so focused on that. So when you said that, I was like, oh yes, yes, very true. Being focused, the importance of your mindset and meditation in order to keep you moving forward. Now, what about when you're in competition, right? So you argue that in competition, the winner is not the perfect performer, but the one who's slightly better than the other, right? So how do you define a winner then?
Well, in any competition, the point is to overcome the other person or team, right? So it doesn't matter if you make mistakes. It just really doesn't matter. I mean, you don't want to make large mistakes, but your mistakes just can't be worse than your opponent's mistakes, right? They have to make the bigger mistakes. So you'll see it at every single level. I mean, if you're watching Pee Wee League, they're going to do some funny stuff, right?
Yeah.
And the errors that they make, the other team just has to last and make one more run. Then you go up to the high school level. You go up to college level. Everybody's still making mistakes. You get to the pros. The multi-million dollar quarterback is still throwing stupid interceptions. The running back who's supposed to be Heisman Trophy winner or the best running back in the league, they're fumbling the ball. Like, what is this? You should be perfect. No, chess players aren't perfect either. In business, you're not going to be perfect. I don't care what it is. But what is your competition doing? What is your competition doing? The most important element of strategy is the competition. The most important element of strategy is your opponent. You have to figure out what they're doing. It's like, you know, Sun Tzu says you got to know your opponent. You got to know yourself, but you want to know your opponent, because that is really where all strategy is crafted. Because I don't care what you're doing. If you never took into account what your competition is doing, you're going to wake up one day and realize that what you thought was this great invention they did months ago, and they're on to the next thing. So that is what matters, knowing your opponent and then just being a little bit better. And if you can keep being a little bit better than the opponent all the time, you could be a lot better if you figure that out, then more power to you. But as chess players, we just need to be better. It's like winning any sporting event. You can win by one, or you can win by 20, or you can win by 40. But hey, one is just as good as 40. So it's just being better than the competition. That's first and foremost when you're in a competitive environment. In a life environment, you try to be better, you know, than yourself. That's really your goal. But in competition, it's just being good enough to beat your opposition.
And have you ever played someone or seen someone who like just made like a I don't want to say monumental, but we'll say monumental mistake, and they just said, that's it. And they never went back to competition again.
I'll tell you what's sad. In chess, we have a lot of prodigies. These kids are brilliant. They're amazing. They caught on to chess so easily. They beat all their friends, no problem. But then they get up to that next level where they're meeting other prodigies, other kids who do the same thing. And they start losing. And it's not the same. Their parent is no longer saying, "Look at my genius child. You're so smart." Now their parent is saying, "It's okay. It's all right. You'll get him next time." And I've seen so many of those kids just quit. So, I mean, uber talented kids, like, wow, this kid is amazing. And they can't take losing. They can't take being mediocre. Forget making big mistakes. I mean, they had to make mistakes to lose, but it was just that next level. You got to work to get over that next level. But they literally leave the game, and who knew how great those kids would have been. But that's one of the marks of greatness. One of the marks of when I see somebody who's going to become a star player is that they get punched in the face, they lose, they get humiliated, they have that horrible game, and they show up the next day. And when I have a kid like that, I know that kid is, when I was coaching chess, my national championship teams, those are the kids I look for. Those kids, you beat them and they go, "Okay, I got it. All right, that's all you got. Let's go. We're doing it again." And you hit them again and they go, "Let's do this again, because I'm not stopping." I embrace those kids over the smart ones who just can't take it on the chin.
Yeah, it's kind of echoes back to what you said earlier about needing to have that resilience in order to keep moving forward. Because if you're gonna lose, like you said, like you lost, you're a grandmaster and you lost.
By definition, you don't become a grandmaster,
Unless you
frankly,
lose.
without losing thousands of times. I
Right,
mean,
right.
it is losing, and I have a chapter in my book called Losing, because you will lose. Losing is learning. Nobody likes losing. I'm not sitting there, I lost the game,
No.
going, "Wow, that
They're
was awesome.
like, yes, that's
Yeah,
just what I wanted to
I lost.
happen.
Check that out." No, losing sucks, but it's
Yes.
your attitude that matters. When you lose, how you frame the loss, what you learn from it. If you walk away not learning anything from a loss, I'm sorry. You're not a true competitor. Because a true competitor will take the pain of losing, yes, but take the lessons from losing more. And that is what keeps you rising to the top. Now, those lessons, especially after a loss, not only the lessons you learn, but the mere fact that you showed up again is the real indicator, the character mattering much more than the intellect.
Yeah. And do you like watch the tapes? Like, do they record your chess matches and then you can watch them afterwards and kind of see your moves, or do you just have to remember it? This is totally off topic, but when you said like we learn from our mistakes, because in sports, they'll watch the tapes, right?
That's
And
not
they'll
off
see what
topic.
happened.
That's not off topic at all. It's
Oh,
exactly
okay,
what
good.
we do. Look, moves are recorded in chess,
Oh, okay.
right? So when you might have seen the Queen's Gambit,
Of
for example,
course.
and then she's, and
Oh,
they're
they
writing
write it
down moves.
down.
Yeah,
Oh, that's
exactly.
what
So
they're doing.
we're recording moves. One reason why you record moves in chess is so that if something happens in the middle of the game, then the arbiter can come over and say, "Oh, hold a minute, give me your score sheets, and I will check based on the moves that you've made." People do some funny stuff in competition, right? So anybody is doing something untoward or the clock malfunctions or something like that, they can look at the score sheets. Now they even have people filming the game. So now you can even go back to the actual tape to see what might happen if somebody made an illegal move or something like that. But the history of chess, the reason why we know what Napoleon did way back when, and all the great players from the past, from the 1800s, the 1900s, and today, is because we have a record. And we can look at those games and say, "This is what this genius, Bobby Fischer, did back in 1972 when he defeated Boris Spassky." We can go over every single one of those games, see where the great moves are, see where the mistakes were, and we can do that for ourselves. And so, yes, when I say we analyze our mistakes and we catalog them, yep, that's how we do it, because we have a written record, written documentation, now a digitized documentation of all those games.
Right. And when you were saying in case something happens, I was thinking like you were like, if someone does something funny, I was thinking like, oh, like an earthquake or like, you know, some sort of disaster happens where you are that you could just pick the game back up again and they put all the pieces back on the board.
Stuff has happened in chess tournaments, you know, like all the lights go out, like
Right.
all the lights go out, and people are like, whoa, what happened? Or it's happened that somebody accidentally knocks the chess pieces over.
By mistake. Yeah,
Yeah.
sure.
And you got to set them back up. Now, usually we remember the game well enough that I don't care if you knock the pieces over. I know exactly where everything was. But if there's any kind of dispute, maybe somebody else doesn't have that skill set, then you're able to say, look, it's written here on the score sheet. Down here, we can just review it and make sure everything is legit.
Right. Makes perfect sense. I was always wondering what they were writing down there. Now I know. All right. So you've talked a little bit about the book Move by Move, Life Lessons on and Off the Chessboard. I want you to talk a little bit more about that and where people can find it. And I also want you to talk about The Life-Changing Magic of Chess, which is a kid's book, which is just adorable. So go ahead and talk about your books.
Well, Move by Move, both books, in fact, can be found on Amazon. So go check it out, or wherever bookstores, whatever bookstore you like. But the Life-Changing Magic of Chess is basically the kids' version of Move by Move. It has a lot of illustrations, which I did not do. I'm not that talented. But it also has a lot of messages. So it talks about my journey as a young boy, my losing to my friend, my eventually becoming a grandmaster. And it gives just various lessons along the way, but also tips of how to play and to get better. So it's a book that I did not decide to write. I should say, it's not a book that I thought to write. I was approached actually by Magic Cat, the publisher, and they have a whole life-changing magic series, which includes a drummer, a skateboarder, and a baker.
Oh, cute.
And yeah, and so I happen to be the chess player in the group, and all the books will be published one after the other. But when it was proposed to me, I just knew it was a great idea, and I definitely wanted to do it. And it turns out that both publishers, the one for Move by Move Chronicle and Magic Cat for Life-Changing Magic of Chess, they decided to publish the book unbeknownst to the other on the exact same day, each book on April 2nd, which was
Meant to be.
mind-blowing. Yeah, and I was like, whoa, what just happened? I had to go tell each one that this had happened. But then they quickly pivoted and said, hey, it's two different audiences. The parents will buy the book for them, the adult book for themselves, and they'll buy the kids book for the kids. So great, let's do it.
Yeah, perfect. I think maybe I'll start with the kids' book first, since I
Yeah.
want to like learn how to play chess.
If you'll do that, you can do that.
Yes, so I will start with the kids' book first, and then I will move myself up to the adult version. Now, aside from the books, what else do you have going on? I know you have something coming up in a couple of days, right here in New York City-ish.
Yeah, well, I have to say my publishers were fantastic about getting the word out, getting the buzz out. But one major event taking place is an interview with the internet's chess teacher. There's an international master named Levy Rosman, who's one of those streamers who's completely blown up. Well, he's going to be the host of an interview for the kickoff to my book at St. Joseph's. Greenlight Bookstore is the bookstore that's commissioning it, but it's happening at St. Joseph's College in Brooklyn. And we're going to be having a cool time talking about the book, the books, chess, the world of chess, and taking questions. So it'll be him and myself. We're going to have an awesome time. People can check out Greenlight Bookstore's events. And the price of the ticket includes a copy of the book. So it really can't be beat. And just like a great evening of chess and some personalities in the game. And learning everything you always wanted to know, but were afraid to ask or just didn't know who to go to.
Perfect. And what's the date on that?
It's on April 8th. It's
That's a
Monday,
Monday.
April 8th. I understand that March Madness, the championship game, is happening after it's over. So you can have your nice little intellectual evening, and
Yes.
then call it to the game itself or wherever you're going to watch, where you'll
Good
watch
to
part
know.
of it.
Good to know. And just for all the listeners, we'll have links to everything in the show notes. So whatever platform you're listening on now, go into the show notes and we'll have links to the book and links to Greenlight Bookstore's events so you can one click. And then if you're going to be in the New York City area, you can certainly go. Is it also being streamed or is it just live?
From what I know, it's just live.
Perfect. All right. So as we wrap things up, what are some of the big takeaways you want the listeners to walk away with from our conversation today?
Well, I think I mentioned the biggest one, which is that the destination is only defined by the journey. Like the journey is the value, gives value. The journey gives value to the destination. That's what I will say. That's one huge takeaway. I think the other is the importance of the competition or the importance of the other person. I think the best, it's better to say the other person because it's not always a competition. Sometimes it's with your spouse, right? Your significant other. Sometimes it's with a child. You've got to always be in the mind of the other person. You're locked in your own mind, you know all the craziness and your own thoughts. Great, you're really smart. But how smart is the other person? How much respect do you need to have for the other person so you can get inside their heads and function, craft a strategy much better because you've really given thought to how the other person thinks. And that's just massive. That's usually the one I think I would always say when somebody asked me the same question. But, you know, both of those go together really well. And I would also say that complacency is a killer. It's just a killer. We're so lazy. Human brain, we're built to be efficient slash lazy. Like that's just, this is how we are. Once we figure something out, we just want to do it the same way. But change comes when you change things up, when you try new things, when you get out of your comfort zone. Because your comfort zone will kill you. And so you've got to be looking for new paths all the time so that you can become stimulated and give yourself a chance to grow.
Perfect. Now, where can people find more about you if they want to learn more about you or reach out to you?
MauriceAshley.com. Really simple. No
Perfect.
problem.
Very, very,
MauriceAshley.com to find everything about me.
very easy. And now, last question. It's one I ask everyone. And knowing where you are now in your life and your career, what advice would you give to your 20-year-old self?
Relax. Relax. You're going to go on a wild ride, dude. It's going to be a lot of ups and downs and craziness and oh, heartache, pain. Just take it one day at a time. One day at a time because it's all going to be fine.
Perfect advice and a great way to end our conversation today. Maurice, thank you so much for coming on. This was great. It's lit a fire under me. I'm going to call the chess place tomorrow and make sure that it's not just for kids and that they have a lessons for adults too. Otherwise, that'd
Awesome.
be super weird. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And everyone, thanks so much for listening. Have a great couple of days and stay healthy, wealthy, and smart. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to leave us your questions and comments at podcast.healthywealthysmart.com.